Another 14 people were arrested yesterday for their role in an armed standoff with federal agents in Nevada back in 2014. The fight was led by rancher Cliven Bundy, who's already in jail facing 16 felony charges. Bundy and his supporters are incensed over the federal government's management of public land in the West. And in neighboring Utah, one congressman is trying to come up with a solution. Republican Rob Bishop is chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, and he recently sponsored a bill that would give some federal land back to the state in exchange for protecting other land from development, including a place called Bear's Ears in southeastern Utah that's important to Native Americans. Environmentalists worked alongside Congressman Bishop, but ultimately say it does not go far enough. Congressman, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you. Appreciate the invitation.
Sure. So we've heard the arguments from ranchers in the West who say the federal government does a terrible job managing the land. But give me your case. What is so damaging about the federal government's control of so much land in Utah?
Well, it's not that the federal government is malicious or even incompetent. It's the federal government owns one-third of America. And if you're west of Denver, it's over half of America. If you're east of Denver, it's only 4%. But what it basically means is the federal government has too much land to actually manage appropriately. If we're really going to have good management of the land and make proper decisions, especially those that are going to be supported by the people who live there, you've got to have some devolution of power, some devolution of authority, so people living closer to the land can make better decisions. We had a simple situation in one of the counties in eastern Utah where people were going on a trailhead hike, and you came to a fork, and you could either go one way, it takes you back to the trailhead, or take another approach, and you die, because it leads off into rough wilderness, no man's land. It took us forever to get BLM to finally put up a sign simply pointing the direction back to the trailhead. And actually, a couple of people had to die before they'd cough up the $5,000 to put up a sign. Those are the kinds of decisions that if you left them up to people closer to the ground, you would have better decisions.
Well, earlier this year, you unveiled a bill that has been years in the making. Hundreds of meetings you've gone through with environmentalists, with ranchers, with energy groups. These are all the sides in this land use debate in the West. It's been called a grand bargain. And I wonder if this is some sort of an attempt to bring peace to this conflict that you're describing.
Peace is a good word. Another word is certainty and finality. The language of the statute is very nebulous, and people feel abused by whatever decision happens to be made. So what we're trying to do is bring some finality to that by saying, well, we'll cut clear boundaries and conserve what is worthy of conservation. We will allow and guarantee outdoor recreation, not just allow, but we'll guarantee it's there so it won't be taken away. We will have areas that can be used for economic development, and they will be clearly defined, and we'll bring certainty so that counties know how to zone and businesses know where to invest and recreators know where they can go and they can have that without having to go through litigation.
By economic development, do you mean oil and gas development, which is a major concern of environmentalists who say even if you set aside extra wilderness area or even if you set aside extra protections for some of the lands in the area, at the end of the day, there's still less protection against things like oil and gas development?
There is 17 million acres of land in this area we're talking about. We're talking about setting aside 4 million acres for conservation and 1 million acres for economic development, which is not just oil and gas, it's also potash. But in that mix is also outdoor recreation, which is part of the economic development, which is now questionable. And that's one thing, especially people who live in the East, have to realize. There is so much land in the West. You can have it all.
Your critics might say that even if the land is expansive, that pollution and smog from development, energy development, would float over some of these more pristine areas.
That's always a possibility. Whether it's probable or not is definitely a different type of issue. And the clean air language that we are putting in there is the language that was developed during the Clinton administration and is status quo language. So we have clean air language in there.
There's an interesting concept here that you've said during this process that you can think of land as a currency, and the more land that you designate as wilderness, the more land you can essentially buy for other purposes like economic development. And your plan would transfer about 40,000 acres to state and local control. It's a tiny portion of the 35 million acres that the federal government manages now. Talk about that. The state controlling previous federal land in your vision for this. How would that work?
We're picking specific areas where the state will do a better job. One of them, for example, is Goblin Valley. Right now, Goblin Valley is a state park. We would like to expand that so it's not just a state park. It becomes a true destination spot for outdoor recreation. The BLM controls the land right now, and they do not develop, they do not patrol it, they do not regulate it, simply because they don't have the manpower or the time to do it. That's why I'm saying they have too much to be able to do this efficiently. You give it over to the state, and we can expand that state park and truly make it a classic destination spot. We talk a lot about the national parks in Utah. Some of the best parks we have in Utah are actually state parks that clearly are destination spots, and we can expand and do that. We want to create a new national monument, but do it the right way, not using the Antiquities Act, and we're kind of like a Jurassic National Park.
But look, managing federal land, as you well know, is a very expensive proposition. How does a state with a relatively small economy afford to manage that land, especially when you consider the price of oil and gas right now, which is in the tank? It's a commodity. It goes up and down. And a state can't really weather that as much as the federal government.
Bull. That is not a logical argument, because the federal government has a much broader reach to do with a much broader base. But if you work it out per acre, it comes to the same situation. The state of Utah is not going to this blindly. They have been looking at land management over the years. They have set aside laws that have been placed. They have set aside budget. They can do it. They can handle it. They know they can handle it, and we can do it very easily. And also, just realize it's not just oil and gas that we're developing off this. There is a spinoff industries that come from that. There's also potash. There are other minerals and recreation. All those inventories can come in there. If we can make Goblin Valley a good destination spot, it can pay for itself.
If you can't get this bill passed, there is a strong chance that President Obama will act on his own and designate this area called Bears Ears a national monument. It would make Native Americans and environmentalists very happy. But what do you say if the president were to make that move?
Actually, once again, I'm going to challenge your premise right there. There is only one Navajo elected official in the state of Utah on a state or county level. She is the commissioner in San Juan County, where this proposed monument would be, violently opposed to having a national monument. The chapters, the Navajo chapters who reside in Utah that are adjacent to this proposed area, they have passed resolutions opposed to a national monument. We incorporated their ideas of creating a conservation area which gives them much more flexibility to do their traditional values and for what reason they want to have this area preserved. And it also comes up with a logical management plan. The Bears Ears Coalition, which is a coalition that's not from Utah, they have a management plan that is simply unconstitutional. So what we have done is taken the interest of the Native Americans in that area, and we have listened to their concerns, and we have come up with a proposal that's far better. If the president nominates this, it will be the first time he's done anything where he cannot claim there is local input or local support. No one in the delegation supports it. The governor doesn't support it. Legislative leaders don't support it. There is no elected official in this area that supports it, and the citizens who live there don't support it. So it would truly be the president superimposing something that is not beneficial and not desired on an area where we have a better idea.
Does this fight over public land that we're experiencing in the West right now go away if a Republican wins the White House?
I don't think it ever goes away until you can actually put things in specificity. And see, that's one of the things I'm trying to do. When I say our effort of this public lands initiative is to create certainty, businesses know where they can invest, counties know where they can zone, recreationists know where they can actually go and enjoy the outdoors.
So it sounds like you're saying the politics of the White House are not as important here.
Well, the politics of the White House could screw it all up. But what we're trying to do is find a way in which you can end the litigation and people can have some kind of feeling of confidence. Right now, part of the problem is simply whether you're a grazer or a bicyclist. You don't know if the Bureau of Land Management is going to change their decision from one week to the next. So if the president were to try and superimpose his will, even though there's no local support for a national monument down there, there would be all sorts of repercussions that would be negative. And I'm trying to avoid that. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to give people a reason to say, all right, the debate is over. The lawsuits are over. Let's go ahead, because now we know what is legal and what is appropriate.
That was seven-term Utah Congressman Rob Bishop, chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee. Congressman, thank you very much.
Thank you.